The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we are immersing ourselves, really getting into the foundational work of Professor Uta Frith. She's one of the world's most influential minds in developmental psychology, and we're looking at her key texts on autism spectrum conditions.
Absolutely. And Frith's work is, well, it's just essential for anyone wanting a modern grasp of the human mind, especially autism. She didn't just list symptoms, you know. She fundamentally shifted how we understand it all, took autism out of the shadows of myth and into rigorous cognitive science.
Right. So our goal today is to give you that solid science-based understanding pretty quickly. We'll focus on the three core cognitive theories, the why behind it all, that Frith argues really define the autistic experience, and, you know, what that means for this whole concept of neurodiversity today.
Okay, so Professor Dame Uta Frith, she's an emeritus professor at University College London, and her career, well, it pretty much is the modern history of autism research. Foundational stuff.
What gives her such authority, I think, is that she wasn't just commenting on the field. She was actively building it. She was actually part of that research team back in the 80s, the ones who first proposed the theory of mind deficit. That idea was a huge leap forward in explaining social difficulties. Revolutionary, really.
Totally revolutionary. And even more distinctively, she coined the term weak central coherence. Or WCC. We'll definitely unpack that later. But it shows she wasn't just synthesizing existing ideas. She was creating new tools, new concepts to understand cognition.
Yeah, she seems to have this rare knack for weaving together all these different threads, genetics, brain scans, psychology experiments, and making it all, well, it makes sense. Creating a picture that's both deep scientifically, but also accessible, which is great for us.
Exactly. She connects the dots in a really clear way.
Okay, so let's dig into the core argument of her work. She argues, quite forcefully actually, that to understand autism, we have to investigate the underlying cognitive processes, the hidden workings of the mind, basically.
Right. Not just looking at the surface behaviors, which is what people did for a long time.
Yeah.
She says we need to understand the link between the autistic brain and what we actually see.
So she's tackling that fundamental question, what actually is autism? And she pushes back against simplistic labels. Instead, she offers this multi-layered framework. You have to look at it on different levels, right?
Yes, three levels. The biological level, so genetics, brain differences, then the cognitive level, that's the thinking styles, the mental mechanisms, and finally, the behavioral level, the observable actions and characteristics. It's about connecting those three.
And the way she structures her explanation is very logical. We start with the behaviors, the diagnosis. Then there's a crucial look back at the history, debunking some really harmful myths.
Oh, definitely. That's so important.
Then we dive into those cognitive theories, the why. And finally, it's all grounded in the biology, the genetics, and brain structure.
And the result is this compelling case that autism isn't, you know, a disease or something broken. It's a fundamental difference in how the brain develops and operates. It shapes how you perceive and think right from the start. It really underpins that whole idea of neurodiversity, a different way of processing the world.
Okay, let's start where diagnosis often starts, the behavioral level. For a long time, this was defined by Wing's triad of impairments. Frith explains these clearly, starting with social interaction.
Right. And this is so often misunderstood. It's not just being introverted or shy. It's a genuine, profound difficulty figuring out all those unspoken social rules. You know, the stuff most people just pick up intuitively.
Like eye contact, reading body language.
Exactly. Or understanding reciprocity in relationships, the give and take. Frith emphasizes that someone might look aloof or uninterested, but it often stems from lacking that sort of built-in social software. It causes real confusion, not deliberate indifference.
Okay. Second part of the triad. Communication impairment. This isn't just about speech delays, is it?
No, it's often more about the social use of language, what linguists call pragmatics. So understanding things like sarcasm, irony, metaphors, even just the natural back and forth rhythm of a conversation can be tricky if you don't easily grasp the underlying social context. Language becomes very literal.
And you also sometimes see things like echolalia. Repeating phrases.
Yes, echolalia, or pronoun reversal, saying you instead of I. Frith points out these aren't just random quirks. They reflect that underlying difference in how language is processed and used socially.
And the third element is impairment in imagination and flexible thinking.
Right. This often manifests as restricted interests, repetitive behaviors, and a strong need for routine and predictability. difficulty adapting to change or imagining different outcomes. Frith shows this is why there's often that insistence on sameness.
It makes sense. If flexible thinking is neurologically taxing, then routine becomes a safe harbor.
Precisely. It's a coping strategy, really.
Now, before we get to the why, you mentioned the history is important. Frith covers the early work, Kanner and Asperger.
Yes, she traces it back to the 1940s. Kanner describing early infantile autism, Asperger describing his little professors with often quite advanced language skills, but social difficulties.
But then things took a darker turn, didn't they? The refrigerator mother hypothesis.
Oh, absolutely devastating. Frith is really clear about how damaging this mid-20th century myth was. Blaming autism cruelly on cold, unemotional parenting, particularly mothers. Imagine the guilt, the suffering that caused families for decades.
It's hard to fathom.
It really is. And that's why that section in her work is so vital. It highlights why we need science. Frith stresses how the shift, starting maybe in the 60s, 70s, towards understanding the neurological basis was what finally lifted that burden of blame from families. Her work stands as a testament to evidence over harmful speculation.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Now let's get to the heart of her contributions, the cognitive theories, the why, starting with theory of mind deficit or mind blindness.
Right. Theory of mind or talking about. It's basically our intuitive ability to mentalize, to understand that other people have their own thoughts, beliefs, desires, intentions separate from our own, and to use that understanding to predict what they might do or say.
And the classic test for this is the Sally Ann test.
Yes, the Sally Ann test. It's ingenious, really simple. So Sally has a marble. She puts it in her basket and leaves. Then Ann comes along, takes the marble out of the basket and hides it in a box. Sally comes back. The question is, where will Sally look for her marble?
Most children would say she'll look in the basket because that's where she thinks it is. She doesn't know Ann moved it.
Exactly. They understand Sally has a false belief. But Frith explains that autistic children often struggle with this. They might say, Sally will look in the box, because they know the marble is in the box. It's harder for them to automatically separate their own knowledge from Sally's different perspective.
Wow. That's incredibly insightful. If so much of social life depends on automatically guessing what others are thinking, and that's difficult, it explains a lot about social challenges.
But hang on. Using terms like deficit or mind blindness, doesn't that kind of clash with the whole neurodiversity idea? How does she square that?
That's a really important question. The way Frith seems to reconcile it is by framing the deficit not as like a total lack or a moral failing, but as a difference in automaticity. For neurotypical people, this mentalizing is largely unconscious, effortless. For many autistic people, it seems to require conscious, deliberate, intellectual effort, like constantly translating.
So it's incredibly tiring.
Exactly. An exhausting cognitive load. It leads to challenges, absolutely, but it doesn't mean there's no understanding or empathy possible, just that the mechanism is different, less automatic.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, what about her own theory? Weak central coherence, WCC, right? Weak central coherence.
Sure.
So central coherence is our typical cognitive bias towards processing information for meaning. For the gist, the big picture, integrating all the details into a coherent whole.
Seeing the forest first?
Pretty much. Frith proposed that in autism, this bias is weaker. The cognitive style leans towards processing the local details, the individual parts, sometimes at the expense of grasping the overall context or gist easily. Seeing the trees before the forest, as you said.
Can you give an example? This one feels a bit more subtle.
Sure. Imagine walking into a really busy place, like a chaotic shop. A neurotypical brain tends to automatically filter out a lot of the sensory noise, the specific buzzing of the lights, the exact pattern on the floor, the distant conversations, and focuses on the gist, find the checkout, or whatever your goal is.
Okay.
For someone with weaker central coherence, the processing might be, well, flatter. All those details, the flickering light, the hum of the fridge, the texture of a shelf, the smell of polish might be processed with more equal weight. It's harder to automatically filter out what's irrelevant to the main goal.
So the important information, like where the exit sign is, might get lost in all the other details the brain is processing just as intensely. That sounds like it could explain sensory overload, too.
Precisely. The system gets overwhelmed because it's not automatically prioritizing the gist.
Mm-hmm.
But, and this is key, Frith frames WCC not just as a deficit, but as a different cognitive style with strengths.
Ah, like the embedded figures test.
Exactly. That's the classic evidence. In this test, you have to find a small, simple shape hidden within a larger, complex, distracting pattern. Autistic individuals often outperform neurotypical people on this. Why? Because their detail-focused processing is actually an advantage here. They're better at separating the tree, the small shape, from the forest, the confusing background. It helps explain things like savant skills in some cases, too.
Fascinating. Okay, third theory, executive dysfunction. This sounds more familiar, maybe, like issues with planning.
Yes. Executive functions are those higher-level cognitive processes, mainly managed by the brain's frontal lobes. Things like planning, organization, working memory, mental flexibility, being able to switch tasks, and inhibiting impulses.
So dysfunction here means difficulties with those things. What does that look like beyond just, say, being bad at making lists?
Well, think about unexpected changes. Your train is canceled, an appointment gets moved. For a neurotypical person, it might be annoying, but you adapt. You replan relatively easily. For someone with executive dysfunction, that sudden need to shift gears, to flexibly rethink the plan, can be neurologically really, really difficult. It can feel like the whole system just jams.
So the resistance to change and the need for routine isn't just preference. It's a way to minimize the chances of hitting that cognitive wall.
Exactly. It's a logical coping strategy. When routines are predictable, you minimize the need for that difficult on-the-fly replanning and task switching. The distress we sometimes see, maybe even a meltdown, isn't defiance. It's often a sign of genuine cognitive overload, the system being pushed beyond its capacity for flexible response.
Right. That reframes things significantly.
Mm.
Okay, finally, Frith grounds all this in the biological basis.
Yes. She pulls together the evidence. It's overwhelming now for a strong genetic component. Twin studies are very clear on this. And it's not just one autism gene. It's complex, likely involving many genes interacting.
And brain imaging.
Brain imaging studies also show differences. Differences in how certain brain areas develop and how they're connected, particularly areas like the amygdala, which is involved in emotion processing, and the frontal cortex, responsible for those executive functions we just talked about. This biological evidence is crucial for establishing autism as an inherent neurobiological variation present from early development.
So tying all this together, what are the big themes or messages we should take away from Frith's work?
Well, theme one has to be her central assertion. Autism is neurodiversity, not pathology. It's a different way of being, rooted in biology. Her work was pivotal in shifting the focus away from searching for a cure towards understanding, acceptance, and support.
And theme two, for me, is that methodological framework. The three levels of explanation, behavioral, cognitive, biological. That's such a powerful tool for thinking clearly about any complex human condition, isn't it? It trains you to always ask why, to look for the cognitive mechanisms behind the behaviors.
Absolutely essential. Then theme three is really embracing the positive side of cognitive difference. WCC is a cognitive style with strengths. That detail focus, the pattern recognition, these aren't just quirks, they're potential assets.
Yeah.
Especially in certain fields like tech, science, engineering. We need to value that difference.
And theme four is something she constantly stresses. The huge diversity of the spectrum. There's no single autism. It presents so differently across individuals. You have people needing significant support and people like Temple Grandin with extraordinary talents. It's a spectrum of needs and abilities, not a simple ladder.
A complex symphony, as she might put it.
Yeah. Her writing is full of these really memorable ways of putting things. That line about the theory of mind deficit really stayed with me. The social world is a blizzard of subtle, unspoken rules and intentions. For an individual who is mind blind, navigating this world without an intuitive map is an immensely difficult and exhausting task.
That generates such empathy, doesn't it? It really clicks. The anxiety isn't just anxiety, it's the cognitive effort of constantly having to calculate social meaning instead of just getting it.
And the one about WCC. The autistic tendency to see the trees before the forest is not simply a defect. In a world that often overlooks the details, this ability to perceive the component parts with extraordinary clarity can be a remarkable strength.
Mm-hmm.
It really forces that reframing.
It does. It shifts it from flaw to potential talent. Mm-hmm. And maybe one more, summing up her whole approach. Understanding the autistic mind requires us to think differently about thinking itself.
That's powerful. It suggests studying autism isn't just for understanding autism. It actually broadens our whole understanding of human cognition.
Exactly. It challenges our assumptions about what normal thinking even is.
So how can we apply these insights in real life? The science Frith lays out seems to offer really practical tools, like based on the theory of mind challenges, communication should be more direct.
Definitely. Avoid relying on subtle hints or indirect language. That requires inferring intentions, which can be hard work. So instead of saying, wow, it's a bit chilly in here, isn't it? Hoping someone gets the hint.
Just say, could you please close the window?
Precisely. Clear, direct, unambiguous language removes that cognitive burden. It reduces potential confusion and anxiety dramatically.
And for parents or teachers, understanding executive dysfunction means structure is key.
Absolutely crucial. Predictable routines, structured environments, using visual timetables can be incredibly helpful. And always, always give advance warning for changes in schedule, even small ones. That allows processing time for the mental shift, which we know can be difficult, can prevent a lot of distress.
Okay. And for employers, thinking about the WCC strengths.
Huge potential there. That precision, the pattern recognition, the intense focus, it makes many autistic individuals exceptionally good at jobs needing accuracy and detail. Data analysis, IT, coding, quality control, engineering.
Right.
So providing fairly simple accommodations, maybe noise-canceling headphones for sensory issues, or clear written instructions instead of vague verbal ones, maybe a quieter workspace can unlock really valuable talent for any organization. It's about fitting the environment to the person, not the other way around.
Thinking back on all this, what really stands out to me is just the sheer explanatory power of those cognitive concepts. Theory of mind, WCC, executive dysfunction. They provide this intellectual toolkit to make sense of behaviors that might otherwise seem baffling. You really start to understand things from the inside out. It feels like a genuine shift from seeing deficits to seeing differences.
Yeah, that paradigm shift is huge. And for me, the enduring message is the importance of rigorous science in dismantling harmful myths. Frith's work was instrumental in moving the conversation away from blame and tragedy, that awful refrigerator mother era, towards a place grounded in neurobiology, acceptance, and ultimately a better appreciation of human diversity. Science driving social progress.
That really is essential knowledge that matters most. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akhotra Foundation.